So what was the when did you come to this country? And like you're born in Rhodes? Or
yes,
you're born?
I'm born in Rhodes.
And like what year did you come to this country?
1923.
I see. And how old were you then?
19.
And why did you come to this country?
Why did I come? It's a long story. like in Maria, yes. My father went bankrupt in 1922 in Rhodes. He lost about $250,000. Which was a lot of money in those days, like 10 million today maybe. Well anyway, I being the oldest son of the family, I had an uncle in North Carolina who was my father's brother. So I wrote to him and told him that being the oldest boy in the family, I want to go to come to this country and support the rest of the family. So my kid brothers that used to live in Turkey, from Rhodes, Turkey is 10 miles from Rhodes, Turkey proper.
Oh, yeah.
It's 10 miles from Rhodes.
Uh-huh.
So my family, my father used to live there with the whole family. My father, mother, and my six brothers.
In Rhodes or across?
Across, in Turkey.
Well, what city was that?
A little Turkish town called Dacia. You never heard of it?
Dacia?
Your parents would know Dacia. They call it Dacia in Spanish. They call it Dacia. They don't know what it is. But anyway, being the oldest boy in the family, I wrote to my uncle, who was a brother of my father, and explained to him that my father went broke, and it's up to me to go to the States and work and support the family so my kid brothers could come to Rhodes from Turkey so they could go to school. The little town, Turkish town, about 7,000-8,000 people, there was no school, no doctors, no hospital, nothing. So I went to Rhodes, and since then I kept supporting the family for almost 30 years. And I didn't let my father work anymore since I came here.
I see. And your father stayed in the old country, he came
they
here?
He stayed in Rhodes, finally he died in Brazil in 1939. My sister from Brazil went to visit my parents in Rhodes with her husband. And her husband said, I smell war coming to Europe. She said, let's take him with us to Brazil. So they took him to Brazil and he died there in 1951 or 52. I don't remember exactly.
I see. Like were there other Sephardic families in the town of Tatia?
No.
No? You're the only family?
We're the only ones. At one time, I remember when I was a kid, there used to be three, four families. Like, one of them was Hanan. Hanan, they live in Atlanta, Georgia now, Yako Hanan. And I believe they have yes. You know, Marco Israel, the florist? His
but
wife.
Here in the city?
Yeah, here in the city.
Uh-huh.
His wife used to be from Tatia.
Let's see. So where did you do most of your you came immediately to North Carolina or
I went straight to North Carolina. I stopped in New York for a couple of weeks to see some friends and relatives I hadn't seen for years and years. So I went straight to North Carolina and I went to work there with my uncle. We had a little delicatessen there. That's how I learned the business.
Okay. Let's see. And so how long were you in North Carolina? And what city were you in?
Asheville, North Carolina, west of North Carolina.
Was there a community there of Sephardi?
No Sephardis. There were about three, four families. After we were the first one, my uncle was the first one. Then the Capuanos, you know the Capuanos here? Baruch Capeluto?
No.
There were about three, four families, and then they went back, some to Georgia, some Rahamim Shaul used to be there. He had a brother here, but I'm not from Sami Shaul.
I see. And when did you come over to Los Angeles from North Carolina?
During the war I was in Washington, D.C. I was stationed there for about 6-7 years. Eight languages.
Oh yeah, which languages are those?
I speak French, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, Turkish, Greek, Hebrew, and a little English.
Boy, so you got a good job there then, huh?
Pretty good job. Went to a restaurant. Smoke cigarette?
No, no thanks.
Yeah.
And so then after that you, like what gave you the idea to come to Los Angeles?
Well, that's also another long story. I was really supposed to go to Seattle, Washington. My uncle, his uncle, I told you about that I went to North Carolina. He moved, after the war, he moved to Seattle, Washington.
Uh-huh.
I was supposed to go to Seattle, Washington. That was my destination. But on the way there, I thought I'd stop here to see some friends and relatives I hadn't seen for 35, 40 years, like Maurice Capluto. I used to go to school with him in the old country. You know Maurice Capluto, Isaac Capluto's brothers. Brother, he's in the liquor business. Your parents know him well.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, and then I have cousins here. Isaac Israel is a cousin of mine. Isaac Israel, big fat fellow. You know, Isaac Bar David is my cousin. So I thought I'd stop here, but I got stuck. I like it.
And with your family here?
Yeah, with my family.
Uh-huh.
My two daughters, they both married here.
Uh-huh.
One is like Sephardi, one is Ashkenazi.
I see. Okay, and so you came here because you enjoyed it? Like, why didn't you keep on going to Seattle?
Well, when I came here, I liked the climate here.
Uh-huh.
And I met a friend of mine that used to be in business with my uncle in North Carolina. He said to me, he says, this is the land of opportunity right here. Let's open up a place. That's, and we did open a place and we went broke.
what did you go into then?
A restaurant downtown.
Uh-huh.
6th and Grand.
Was it like a cafe?
Well, no, it was more or less like a cafeteria style, delicatessen and cafeteria.
Uh-huh. I see. And what year was that?
That was 1947.
I see. Yeah, right. Okay. And then what did you go in after that?
After that, I went to work for somebody else. And I've been working ever since.
Uh-huh. And then you're at Dale's now, right?
No, at Dale's now, yeah. Only one day a week, Saturdays only.
Ah.
I'm retired now, 70 years old.
Okay, I have another question, Mike. What occupation did your father have in the old country?
He was a merchant.
Uh-huh.
He used to sell to the farmers in Creighton.
Uh-huh.
He had everything, general store.
Uh-huh.
Sell everything, clothing and groceries and food, everything he used to sell.
Uh-huh.
And they used to pay on credit, he used to sell on credit. They used to pay him during the season, they used to pay him back in almonds and walnuts and figs and olive oil, things like that, which in turn he used to ship into Europe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So like, and that business was in Tachina?
Tachia,
yeah. And did you guys ever go to Rhodes?
You can spell it T-A-C-C-I-A.
Okay, Tachia. Okay. How often did you go to Rhodes when you were a young man?
How often did I used to go to Rhodes?
Uh-huh.
From there?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I used to go every Pesach. We used to spend
two weeks
to Rhodes for a ton of Pesach.
For, to see the family and stuff?
See the family, yes.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was 7 years old, my sister, who really, she's the oldest of the family, I'm next to her.
Mm-hmm.
My sister who lives in Brazil now, she's
uh-huh.
the oldest of the family. And at the age of 7, she was 8 or 9, and I was about 7, we went to Rhodes to go to school. Because there were no schools in that little town. And I was brought up, I grew up with my grandparents on my mother's side.
Uh-huh. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. let's see. Oh yeah, like when you came to this country, like, do you remember any interesting stories of, you know, some of the first Sephardic had when they came, you know, maybe with the language barrier or any difficulties with getting jobs or Ashkenazim?
As far as myself,
yourself, or
trouble with the language? No, I never had trouble because I studied English in the old country.
Uh-huh. How about maybe stories you heard or having to do with the Ashkenazi, maybe because
the only story I heard was this, that when my uncle, he used to live, originally he was from Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Rhodes to get Rhodes for vacation with his wife to see his parents. When he came back, she decided she didn't like Atlanta, Georgia anymore, so they went to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And he opened up a delicatessen, but he used to be a delicatessen business in Atlanta, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
So he opened a delicatessen, and the Jews, they didn't believe he was Jewish. He told them he was Sephardic. They never heard of Sephardic Jews those days.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't know what a Sephardic Jew was. And he used to tell them he's Spanish Jewish from Spain. And they didn't believe him because he put delicatessen, they opened up a big delicatessen, you know, and he put aside kosher delicatessen, you know. And they used to say, you put in kosher delicatessen because you want our business. But Yom Kippur came and he went to the synagogue, they couldn't get over it. They called him to the Sefer Torah, he said the bracha in Hebrew, he pronounced it in Hebrew like we do. And since then they became very friendly. Very friendly. friendly with us.
But first they weren't sure about...
No, they weren't sure. They thought he was playing a trick. They thought he was in order to get their business, you know.
Uh-huh. Okay, also, was your family very religious, or were you very religious in the old country?
I'm not religious,
no. How about, in the old
in
country?
In the old country, yes, I was. I was very religious. My parents were very, very religious. My grandparent, the one I grew up with,
uh-huh.
every day he used to take me to the synagogue. Every morning at 6 o'clock I had to get up, 6:30 we were in the synagogue and say the morning prayer.
And was that in Tasha, or was that...
No, in Rhodes.
How many years did you live in Rhodes?
How many years?
Uh-huh.
From the age of 7 to 18, 19.
Uh-huh.
About 11, 12 years.
Okay. So, and how often did most people go to the synagogue in the old city?
In the old country?
Uh-huh.
Three times a day? Morning, noon,
oh.
afternoon, and evening.
It's like...
In high Arabic. In high Arabic.
I missed that all of that because I...
I'll tell you a story that happened to me once.
Okay.
In Rhodes, I was founder of a Jewish sport club called the Maccabi. We called the Maccabi in those days.
Uh-huh.
I was the president. From the day it was founded until the day I left Rhodes. In fact, they even composed a song about me when I left Rhodes. I was so popular then. And when I went to the president of the community, he was president of the community, and the doctor to sign papers, you know, for immigration, they refused to give me the papers. They said, "What will become of the youth without you here?" I said, "Don't worry, I took care of that. I replaced somebody else and I'm training him." So anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, yes. So, being the president of the Jewish youth of the Maccabees, one day after Sukkot, you know, we had a sukkah outside in our house. It used to be in the second floor. We had a great big terrace. And we used to build sukkah there. So all of a sudden, while we're having breakfast after the keilah, after the synagogue, we're having breakfast, a couple of Jewish boys from the Maccabees came upstairs to see me. They said, "Somebody downstairs, they want to see you." I said, "Somebody who?" "Some Russian Jews coming, going from Russia to Palestine."
Uh-huh.
They didn't have no money, they didn't have no passport, they didn't have no papers, nothing. And when they came to the island of Rhodes, the government would let them proceed. They wanted to send them back.
Uh-huh.
So they want you to help them. I said, "What can I do? Why don't they go to the president of the community? What can I do, little boy like me, 18 years old?" Well, I wasn't even 18 then, I was about 17 years old. Well, anyway, I went from house to house, every Jewish house. I knocked at the door and I made my... congratulations for these holidays, you know, holiday greetings,
uh-huh.
and I start collecting money. I collected so much money that I bought 12 big sacks. Big, those sacks in the old country were big, long, twice as big as that. I bought each sack contained 20 loaves of bread.
Uh-huh.
I bought 4 wheels of kashkaval, you know the kashkaval,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So crazy about. I bought 4 wheels like that. I bought sardines, 2 cases of sardines, I bought olives, and so many things, and I took them aboard the ship, you know.
Uh-huh.
And when I went there, the guards, you know, the Italian guards that were aboard the ship, they won't let me proceed. They said, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm the leader, I'm the one that is bringing all this thing." He said, "All right, you can go, but not the rest, you cannot go." We went by boat, you know, rowing boats.
Uh-huh.
So when I went up there, on the ship, I saw men there, old men with beards, but these long, young kids, young boys, young girls, okay. all going to Palestine.
I haven't
seen this before. Pioneers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, and they all gave us, they gave me hundreds of Herzl bottles, you know, Theodor Herzl, the founder of Zionism.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
they gave me his picture with the big, long beard. He was a Jew.
Uh-huh.
The one that originated in Zionism.
Right.
So they gave me hundreds of those bottles to distribute it in Rhodes. I got so tempted, I almost went to Palestine with them. That was in 1922.
Oh,
I almost went to Palestine with them.
Wow. And there's a whole boatload of people, huh?
There was about 800 people there.
Wow.
800 people there.
Boy, that came from through the Black
Sea. From Russia, through the Black Sea, through the Turkey, through the Dardanelles, yeah.
Boy, that's amazing.
I almost went to Palestine with them.
So
in 1922, I would have stayed there maybe on this style.
And so you helped them out with food?
Oh yes,
kind of
in food, and what money was left I gave it to them too. And not only that, I went to see the governor. The governor knew me very well from school because I was very good in Italian school.
Governor of what?
Governor of
the
island,
Dallas?
Of Rhodes,
uh-huh.
yes. Governor of Rhodes was an Italian.
Uh-huh.
And he used to know me very well because I was a good athlete in school, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was representing the Jewish school. In fact, I was champion running for 3 years, champion broad jump and high jump.
Uh-huh.
I was a very good athlete. But anyway, I went to see him,
uh-huh.
and he let me in. And he gave me a written piece of paper
uh-huh.
to let the Jews proceed, even without passport, to go to Palestine. And uh-huh. they went.
Very good. Huh.
Who knows, maybe David Ben-Gurion was there too. I don't know.
Let's see. Do they do other sports too in that Maccabean thing?
Sport? Oh yes.
Like
soccer was the main sport.
Soccer was the main sport.
And gymnastics.
And like, was it all Sephardim?
Sephardim, yes. We used to compete against the Greeks, the Italians, and the Turks. And we used to win all the time. In every field we are beaten.
Uh-huh. I see. Let's see. Okay, also, like when, you used to go to, in the old country, when you lived with your family, you used to go to synagogue all the time.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Once you came to this country, like, you never went, or once in a while, first?
Except on holidays, when I lived in North Carolina, on holidays, like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur,
uh-huh.
I used to go to the Ashkenazi synagogue, that's all.
What was it supposed to be, the Ashkenazi synagogue?
It's not much different from ours,
uh-huh.
except that they pronounce different than we do, that's all.
But most of it's in Hebrew still, right? It's
oh,
not,
Hebrew,
it's not,
yes.
not
Hebrew,
too much in
Hebrew. Hebrew books, the same books
uh-huh.
like we have.
Uh-huh.
The same books, only they pronounce it different. They have it Hebrew, and English, and Hebrew, like we have.
Okay.
Same way.
Okay. And also, do you remember, a lot of people came or left Rhodes because of, they didn't want to be drafted into the Turkish army, you know, like 19, this, you know, when, it must have been when you were a young person.
Yeah.
Do you know if any of the Sephardim were drafted at all? Or they always leave?
No, they were not drafted in the Turkish army. The only one I know, he used to live in Palestine, and he served under the Turkish government. He served as a Turkish soldier in Palestine. That's Isaac Capelluto, Maurice Capelluto's brother. You know that? I'm sure you do. Your people know him very well.
Uh-huh.
Isaac Capelluto was a Turkish soldier in Palestine.
But you don't remember anything from Rhodes?
Rhodes, no. Not one.
Once the Italians ruled the
Italians,
islands, did they never
under
they
Italy
never
were
that?
Very, very happy under Italy.
Uh-huh.
They did very well under Italy.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Let's see.
In fact, the Jews were the Italian government's favorite. Every time they had a holiday or anything like that,
uh-huh.
they would invite the Jewish community, the Greek community, the Turkish community. But the Jewish community was always first to be invited.
Oh,
always
yeah.
first.
And did you enjoy living in Rhodes, or what was it?
Oh yes, I did.
It's like out there.
Those days were very good, just like here, no difference.
Uh-huh.
I don't see any difference. Those days were really very happy, very happy. We were poor, but happy.
Uh-huh.
Very happy.
Okay.
Well, your parents should know the same thing I'm telling you.
My grandparents,
yes.
He left 1912.
Oh, he left 1912?
Yeah. My grandmother,
1920. I met your grandmother.
Uh-huh.
How old?
1920.
Oh, well.
Is your mother born here too?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
my both my parents
are
born here.
Oh, that I know. I know your father is born here.
Yeah, my mom is. Right. Okay. Let's see. Yeah. Pasha is
Yeah, no, Pasha.
No.
Pasha is an Egyptian word for like night.
Pasha,
it's like a knight. Anyway, my grandfather used to be a tourist guide in the island of Rhodes. In 1900, the then Italian crown prince, who was a young boy like the Prince of Wales, you know, he used to travel all over for business,
uh-huh.
and he went to the island of Rhodes for a visit. So, that was in 1900. And my grandfather, being an interpreter, he spoke French, English, and Italian. Pure Italian, not much Spanish, mostly. So he took the prince all over the island of Rhodes, you know, to show the interesting places of Rhodes. They used to ride aboard the jackasses, you know,
uh-huh.
and took the Turkish bed and everything. So while he was visiting in Rhodes, his father in Italy, the king, was assassinated. And my grandfather was the one that gave him the cablegram that he received from the government that his father was assassinated for him to go back to Italy. and become king. While in the Island of Rhodes, when my grandfather took him aboard the ship, he was called His Majesty, right in the waters of the Island of Rhodes. He was called His Majesty.
Wow.
That was in 1900. 30 years later, 1930, the island already used to belong to Italy at that time. So the king, after 30 years, when he was pressed, he was in Rhodes in 1900, but in 1930, after 30 years and being a king for so many years, for almost 30 years, he decided to visit the Island of Rhodes and all the other kings island to see how they were getting along under the current government. And when he got out of the, when he came out of the ship, you know, the first thing he asked, he said, I was here 30 years ago on this island. He said, a Jew whose first name I remember, Jacob, but I don't remember his second name. He was my interpreter and my guide. I would like to know if he's still alive. I'd like to see him. So they told him, tomorrow when we go to visit the Jewish quarter, you'll see him there. And the next day, my brother sent me a newspaper he wrote. I used to read Italian perfectly. I still do for that matter. But anyway, in the paper it says, in the multitude, the big crowd, in the front was the old man, Jacob Pasha.
Wow.
And when the king saw him, we recognized him and walked towards him. And when he walked towards him, he took out his, he opened his coat like this, and he took out his gold watch with the gold chain and the emblem of the House of Savoy, which the kings of Italy they used to call the House of Savoy.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, I don't remember the history now. Anyway, he took it out and presented it to my grandfather as a present. So my grandfather, with tears in his eyes, he knelt on his knees right on the street and he kissed his hands. And a week later, he died. When he was walking in the street and he fainted. He fainted, the governor ran away, they sent the doctors and everything to take care of him. And he said, there's nothing you can do to save him. He says, at my age, he was 85 years old then. He said, at my age, to receive an honor like this from a king, it was too much for my heart to stand. So he died right there. And the government, when he died, the king was already back in Italy. When he died, he sent my grandmother monthly pension every month. He sent her so much every month for her uncle. And my grandmother, she died here in Seattle, Washington. She has a she had a daughter there, was multimillionaire, youth of the Al-Hadids. That's the Al-Hadid brothers, the three brothers, Charlie, Jack, and Ike. Al-Hadid.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Well, those three brothers, the first cousins of mine. Their mother was my mother's sister, also my grandmother's daughter. So after the war, she came here and she went to Seattle, Washington, and she died there.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, that's really sad.
Okay.
do you know, there's one Observatory that was here in Los Angeles very early. It was Victor Observatory. Do you know of him?
He was my second cousin.
Oh, yeah?
He was my first. In fact, my father's first cousin.
Oh, yeah?
His father, my father's father were brothers. He's got
another
brother in Long Beach, Charlie Abzada there.
And that's whose brother? That's Victor's brother?
Yes, Victor's brother.
Oh, I see. Okay. Do you have any idea?
No, Victor's first cousin.
First cousin,
yeah,
okay.
First cousin.
Okay, very good. Probably the first that came to mind was like Nassim al-Hadid in 1904. And then also your uncle?
Then my other, also my uncle, he's my uncle too. Then my uncle Victor of Zaradel, my father's brother, the one that went to North Carolina, he came here to this country in 1906. He was living in Seattle, Washington. He was engaged to a girl. He found out later that she had TB. He left his business and everything, and he came to Los Angeles. 1907 or 1908, something like that.
Uh-huh. Wow. Like, how did you know, like, stories from other people, or...?
Oh, they tell me.